stories of economic growth, job creation, and business success from across the 11-county community of Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania. Now, here's Matt Gabry.
Connections with other people. We have them every day. In a coffee shop or a supermarket, a walk through the neighborhood, a phone call, a casual greeting in an office building, hotel lobby, or restaurant. And these interactions can oftentimes evolve into more meaningful relationships. And these casual, sometimes innocuous connections can be so meaningful that they're actually life-changing. And that can happen when we least expect it. Now, I suspect we have all had or observed an experience just like this in our business or our career, with a friendship or in a more personal relationship. We never know when we'll meet someone who will impact our lives in truly profound ways. This is exactly how the story of our guests on this episode of Growing Greater begins. Two fun, creative entrepreneurs who are carving out a special place of their own in the craft beer landscape. It's Luke Bowen and Trevor Hayward, co-founders of Evil Genius Beer Company. Purple Monkey Dishwasher, Stacy's mom. I'll have what she's having. You're killing me, Smalls. And my favorite, Ma, the meatloaf. These are just a few of the unusual names of their beers created in their patented beer naming process in what they affectionately refer to as the Lab. It's located in the Fishtown neighborhood of Philadelphia. And by the way, the beer naming process, it's not really patented. It's all part of the fun, creative environment established by Luke and Trevor. The creativity in the naming of their brews, it's exceeded only by their imaginative flavors, which are incredibly delicious. And this novel and innovative approach embraced by Luke and Trevor has propelled Evil Genius Beer Company onto the regional and national stage of craft brewing. In front of a live audience of MBA students, faculty, alumni, and area business leaders at Villanova University's School of Business, the very place where Luke and Trevor were destined to meet, we learned how the seeds of entrepreneurship grew into the Evil Genius Beer Company. And here, Luke shares more about the company that he and his friend and business partner, Trevor, have built.
One of the things that we definitely really try to touch on is creativity and innovation. Beer has been around for thousands of years, and by and large, it's remained mostly unchanged. But, you know, we really believe that there's something that we could do differently when we started our company. So, you know, we wanted to take, you know, and respect that kind of time-honored tradition and really respect the product, but also create something and make it different and make it our own and make it very authentic to our sense of humor, our tastes, the things that we enjoyed about it. And that was really the gestation and the beginning of what we wanted to create. And that's kind of how it manifests itself today.
Yeah. Trevor, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, basically to kind of just backing up what Luke said there is that really this was something that came about that we wanted to start something that we could have an impact on and that we could be very creative with. And I think we've spun it in. It's over the course of the past almost 9 years, it's gone in various different directions and the market has told us different things about what they wanted and we've listened and that's how we've been able to get to where we are today. And I think that's really like being creative and allowing that your customers and listening to them has been really the biggest part of our success in that respect.
I love that perspective of listening to the customer and adjusting to the marketplace based on what you're hearing either directly or indirectly. And it's actually a really good segue to your backgrounds, because I'd love for each of you to tell us a little bit about your backgrounds. You actually have really unique backgrounds, even before you chose to embrace the opportunity here at Villanova. And Trevor, I'd love for you to start by sharing with us a little bit about your background and how you ultimately found yourself here at Villanova back in, what was it, 2008 timeframe?
2008. So as you can tell, I'm really local.
Yeah, that's right.
So I moved here in 2008 from Dublin, Ireland. I had lived there for most of my life. I lived in Australia for a couple of years when I was backpacking after college, but I came here to go to grad school. And my brother had lived here for 7 or 8 years at that point and had gone through the MBA program here and convinced me that it was a great program and that I should apply. And so I did just that, got accepted, and started in the fall of 2008. And I mean, I guess that's my pretty much all of my history. And that's when I met this guy.
Well, you're being a little modest, and I would love for you to dive in because you've done some other things in business before.
True. Yeah. I started a business it was like a travel business for backpackers. So after I came back home from Australia, I saw an opportunity there with a friend of mine who still lived there.
Yeah.
And so we started something together and it went okay, but it wasn't doing what I kind of wanted it to do.
Yeah.
The opportunity to come here came about and we decided to kind of set that aside and go our separate directions, but I've always had the entrepreneurial bug in me. I always knew that I was probably going to be someone who wanted to and hopefully would work for myself. And that's thankfully what it ultimately ends up being.
So I know your brother was here before and kind of laid a little bit of a groundwork for you and also provided some encouragement and some structure as you made the journey from Dublin to Greater Philadelphia. But how hard was that for you as a young person in Dublin? You know, I guess take us back to 06, 07 time frame when, you know, this is kind of swirling through your mind. Was it like, I'm not quite sure what I want to do with my life and I'm going to do this? Or it's like, I'm definitely going to do this and this is my path, this is my mission?
Yeah, I think it was more the former in that I wasn't really sure what direction I wanted to go in. But you're right, it was a bit of a leap of faith because mm-hmm. I was leaving behind most of my family, all of my friends. Like, I didn't know anybody when I got here other than my brother and my sister-in-law. Yeah. So a bit of a leap in that respect. But I had kind of done that before, having, you know, backpacked. So I was used to rocking up into places and having to just say hi to people I didn't know before and hopefully making some friends. So,
yeah.
You know, some people can do that. I don't think of myself as very much of an extrovert. This guy is the one who's the extrovert.
Yeah.
But when I need to, I can do that, though.
Yeah, gotcha. And I want to come back to that leap of faith and that moment, because there's a milestone in there that I want to touch on in a moment. But before I do that, Luke, you didn't grow up in Dublin, did you?
No, I'm very local, yeah.
Where's home for you and what's your background?
So I grew up in Delaware, actually, when I was young, and then my parents moved to southeastern Pennsylvania when I was a teen. So I kind of split my time in between Delaware and southeastern PA. My background is I come from a family of entrepreneurs and, like, literally going back, like, pre-Civil War. My great-great-great-grandfather founded the Remington Firearm Company, and
wow.
I've had various family members who have been in automobiles and manufacturing and what have you for over 100 years. So entrepreneurship is kind of in my blood. Most people in my family don't work for other people. They work for themselves. But my journey was very different. You know, I was kind of atypical. You know, I wanted to be a musician, so I played guitar and toured around with bands and did things like that. And that's what ultimately I wanted to be when I grew up. And, you know, that was my first choice, and it didn't quite work out. But I think making beer isn't a bad backup plan. So
yeah.
I think life turned out okay for me.
They kind of go hand in hand.
Somewhat, yeah. Very creative, very fun.
Yeah.
But I worked in corporate America for a little while and just didn't like it. Just didn't like, you know, the structure. It just didn't appeal to me. And not that everything in life needs to speak to you in some way, but it's a lot cooler when it does, you know? And so I just kind of decided one day in May to just walk into my boss's office and quit my job with no backup plan, no nothing. I just had this quarter life crisis. And that was kind of when I quit my job. My girlfriend broke up with me. I did this whole thing, you know, literally all in like 1 week. And it was the greatest week of my life. And it completely changed the trajectory of my life in its entirety, and it set me on this path and kind of set me towards coming here. And then when I was here, meeting Trevor, and then after I met Trevor, starting this thing, and now it's taken on, you know, now I'm sitting here hanging out with you, man.
So I love that. I have to ask two sidebar questions, really quick ones. Do you keep in touch with your old girlfriend at all?
No. I think she friend requested me on Facebook years later after Evil Genius became a thing, and I ignored that request.
Yeah, right. She may even be named after one of the beers.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
And my other question for you is, do you still play a musical instrument?
Every day.
Do you dabble in that?
Every single day.
Cool.
Yeah, every single day.
What are you playing?
I play guitar.
Nice.
So I collect guitars. That's like my thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have a guitar in my office. I play every day.
That's kind of like your release.
That's my release.
Yeah.
It's completely different than work. It's totally creative. It's just when I get in my moment and I just turn everything off. I'm lucky that I have that and will always have that forever.
Right.
Since some of my best ideas have actually come about business have come either while playing or just after finish playing and then reapproaching something. I've just had these moments of clarity. That's why it's like so essential for me.
I love that. That's great. So I'm glad you shared that part of your story. And I'm really glad, Trevor, that you were able to share that part of the story of, you know, I'm sitting back in Dublin trying to figure out what to do next. I had this encouragement and this kind of support structure with my brother and sister-in-law, and I'm going to do this. And that courage that it took for you, Luke, to walk into your boss's office, I'm going to guess it was May of 07?
It was 08.
08? Okay.
Yeah,
wow, that was fast.
Yeah, it was May of 08. And, Yeah, I just, you know, I just didn't work out.
And then you enrolled here at Villanova shortly after that, I suspect.
Yeah, so a funny story about Villanova. Yeah. So my very first job I ever got, and the guy that trained me was a Villanova MBA alum.
Okay.
Jaron Tafe. And he
ended, and what kind of industry were you in?
I was in sales in the media industry. I worked for Random House and then Time Warner for a period of time. And the guy was like super inspirational to me. Like he was when I first started, he had just finished the MBA program, just got promoted to like senior sales manager and sales trainer. And he like immediately took to me. It was like my very first day on the job. He's like, I'm going to teach you everything I know. Like you seem to be one of the people that get it. And then like he died. Suddenly, like
wow.
It was really, really sad. And, you know, he had told me all about this program and like everything about coming to Villanova and how it made like a huge impact on his life and helped his career. So after he died, it was just like, okay, this is the only place like I need to go. Like
right.
I need, like this guy like really helped me when I was really young. And it was a really transformational component of his life coming here. And I was like, I have to experience this.
You may have mentioned it and I missed it. What's his name?
Jaron Tafe.
Jaron Tafe. So your encounter with Jaron Tafe as a young person just out of college, your first real job, if you will, was another milestone. And your introduction to him had that ripple effect, that butterfly effect, if you will. And where I'm going with this is, if you remember, I'm not quite sure if you do, so I'm really putting you on the spot, when you guys first met, because that milestone moment of you quitting your job in May of 08 and enrolling at Villanova because of the inspiration from your boss, and you... that journey you took across the pond to move to Philadelphia and enroll in Villanova, you guys never would have met if these different things happened or didn't happen in your life. And do you remember the first time you met?
I mean, it would have been, so we both took the introduction accounting class. It was one of the first things you have to take.
Yeah.
And so we were both sitting in the back row at different tables. And so they assign you in that first week you're in groups or whatever, and he takes a picture of you so that it goes up on his website at the end of the semester if your group wins. And I know that I remember seeing and meeting Luke that night because everyone introduced themselves. That's a pretty normal part to a lot of the classes, or it was at the time anyway.
Yeah, right.
So, so that would have been. And then a lot of our classmates used to go out because that was a Thursday night class. We go for happy hour.
Yeah.
So this is like 9 o'clock at night. You go for a beer before you go home.
Sure.
And so I know we got to talking at one of those within a few weeks and both realized that we liked beer.
Right.
and that also that we'd had different entrepreneurial experiences in the past. And that was kind of where our friendship developed from. And then ultimately the business came out of as well.
Nice. So was it that natural? I mean, was it just that kind of casual where Thursday night we're going out for beers after class and it developed and kind of, if you will, blossomed into a friendship and a little bit of a, I don't want to suggest it was a bromance, but you know, you connected. You clearly connected, right?
We actually bumped into each other a few different times. We bumped into each other at the, what was the event down in
what, the career fair?
The career fair, because that happens within a few weeks. And then we also, I was living out in Collegeville at the time and I bumped into Luke in the Wawa there.
Okay.
Because he happened to be dating a girl who lived in Collegeville.
So right.
We just kept bumping into each other in different circumstances. And so a natural friendship developed from that and seeing each other around campus and just being in classes. Like we were taking a lot of the same classes.
Well,
it's actually you.
It was at that Wawa. So I wasn't working because I had quit my job.
Right.
And, you know, I was paying for school. And Trevor had told me about the Villanova Graduate Fellowship Program.
Okay.
I was doing that at the time.
Because you were doing that. And like I hadn't found a job yet. And you were like, hey, you should apply for this fellowship program because they're looking for applicants. And literally like the next day, like I sent in an application.
Cool.
And that was the opportunity for me then to be full-time on campus.
Right.
So we were together and we had the opportunity to work on this like full-time together.
Right.
Yeah.
So Trevor, I'm being a little light here, but did you ever have a moment where you're like, there he is again in the Wawa in Collegeville. Is he like stalking me?
I did think that. No, not at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, just random that we would bump into each other in so many different places.
It was almost meant to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There you go.
And speaking of that, take us down that journey a little bit further. So now it's 2010. You discover you have a passion for beer. Did you start like brewing in the basement? Or like how did the business plan start to come together and ultimately, you know, establish what is like a real shop in 2011?
Yeah, so like the beer thing actually came from me. I'm talking a lot about my dating life, but I dated a girl in college whose father ran Rolling Rock, the brewery in Latrobe, PA, and was also
part of the attraction.
Yeah, it ran Sierra Nevada Brewing Company in Chico. Actually, I didn't know that until like halfway through we were dating.
Okay.
I was like, oh, now it's time for me to like meet your dad and vice versa. It's like, what do your parents do? That kind of thing. And I was like, oh, your dad does what?
Right.
You know what I mean? It was just like, you know, and so I'm still really close with her and him. And so like, you know, her dad was a lifelong beer guy, worked for Rolling Rock for 20 some years and ran a brewery in Wisconsin, then ran Sierra Nevada out in Chico. And like, so I spent years learning about the beer business from him.
Right.
I was like, hey man, just teach me everything you know. Like, this is the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
And after, you know, just didn't work out because of life, but her dad and I still kept in touch.
Nice.
You know, when Trevor and I met, we were kind of going through this gestation of like, look, like, this was post-financial crash. Like, we weren't getting jobs.
Yeah.
Like, let's just call a spade a spade. Like, there were no investment banks anymore. Companies were downsizing. And it was like, okay, well, we need to find another career alternative rather than coming out of an MBA program and sort of doing that. And so we both had entrepreneurial leanings, been involved with startups. And, you know, we had kind of been talking about things to do. Actually did some work with some Professor Kevin Clark, who's here, actually sat in on that very first meeting with a bunch of stuff. And Pat Majitti, who's now the provost here, and Scott Newbert, who I'm not sure if he's here anymore.
Yeah.
Or retired. But, you know, the brewery idea was just like, look, I know some people. I've been doing this for a little while. And this was right before it hit its like singularity and like really started to take off. And I was like, I think
you mean craft brewing.
Yeah. So like it was around, but it hadn't proliferated to the level that it had has since.
Right.
But I had seen all of these people that had been in it for a long time make all these strategic investments in the space.
Right.
Kind of preparing for this big leap. And I was like, I think we could do this.
Yeah.
And turned out that was the idea that won.
So when Luke's articulating this to you, Trevor, are you like, dude, you're crazy? Or are you like, yeah,
I still say that.
Yeah, right. right.
No, I mean, honestly, I remember him talking to me about his ex-girlfriend and her father or whatever when we were out at a bar one night. And I was like, huh, I like this brewery idea. We should talk about it some more.
Yeah.
And we were together almost every day because we were here working for our professors. There was a lounge for us. So we were constantly going back and forth about different ideas, this one. And so we had a lot of time on our hands to chat about these things and chat them out and talk them up the wall and down the wall and figure out whether that was a good idea or not.
Yeah.
And it gave, which was great in and of itself. And then the fact that we had three different professors here willing to sit down with us and kind of critique those ideas really then helped us hone in on going, okay, so this one seems like the most viable option for us.
Yep.
And then from there, we kind of said, okay, well, let's focus completely on that. How do we make that work? And who's going to be in charge of what?
Yeah.
And also, how do we utilize every class we have here about beer?
Yeah.
Every project we did in every class here, we made it about beer.
Yeah. It starts to become part of you.
Exactly.
Every day.
And we're like, how do we take this class and make it so that it works for us when we do open our business?
Yeah. You know? Right. So. Which I want to go to next, but I can't get this thought out of my mind. I don't know if you guys are thinking the same thing. And it's a little bit of a theme with Luke, I think, but he's calling his old girlfriend saying, hey, how you doing? Your dad there?
Right? Yeah, no, literally.
Does that still happen?
No, I talk yeah. You know, every now and again. And
yeah.
He calls and checks in on me or shoots me an email and say, hey, how's it going? Do you need anything? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was really good because, you know what, when I was 21, 22, he was the first adult that wasn't, you know, the outside of my circle, like family circle, to be like, hey, like, you know,
yeah,
don't worry about it. Like, you're gonna,
you got this.
You're gonna be just fine. Like, whatever you do, like, it's gonna work out.
And that's
like,
nice.
That's incredibly reassuring when you're 22 years old.
Yeah,
like, it really is.
Yeah, we need that kind of confidence in our lives, even though we may carry ourselves that way. We don't always necessarily have that until you hear it reinforced.
Yeah, you're tremendously insecure.
Adults.
Like, you're overeducated and underexperienced.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know where your place in the world is yet. And then if you see someone you respect and who's obviously been very successful, saying, hey, you know, take it one step at a time, but it's going to be okay. Like, that gave me a lot of confidence to, you know, take some leaps of faith.
So it's through world-class programs like the MBA curriculum offered at Villanova University that fosters an environment of collaboration amongst the brightest, eager young minds in the business community. And that can result in the formation of really successful and inspiring companies like Evil Genius. Joining us for the recording of our program in front of our live studio audience was Dr. Joyce Russell. She's the Dean of the Villanova School of Business. Dean Russell, who has extensive experience in business and in academia, shares with us just what makes Villanova University and its Villanova School of Business such a special place, and what actually attracted her to the Villanova family.
So Villanova, I think the university and the School of Business, first I would just say, it's a nationally ranked university, right? So if you think about it in terms of really, and we have a lot of our products here and faculty and staff, but really strong academics, which is all rooted in liberal arts, which is fantastic. So it doesn't matter if you're in business or engineering or nursing or the sciences, you have this great liberal arts background. In addition, in particular in the business school, you get a lot of professional development. So you have this strong academic development, you have this strong professional development. So all the communication skills and leadership skills and interpersonal skills, because we know that's what's really important and that distinguishes people.
Yeah.
And then I'd say the third big piece about the university and the school of business that's so unique and what drew me is, in addition to those two things, is just we think about it in terms of student outcomes. So one part of student outcomes is professional and success.
Right.
So the ROI.
Sure.
And so we have a lot of great products, right, in terms of our students get great jobs, whether those are undergrads or grads or career enhancement or switching. But then the other piece of student outcomes, which is really exciting to me, is what we would call personal success or character development.
Okay.
And so I think that's what differentiates us. And so when you think about this Augustinian community, strong academic, strong professional development, and then strong character development, that's something really unique that not all schools can say. And so I think that's one of the things that certainly drew me.
Yeah.
About the area, it's interesting. I'm from Maryland originally, and so it's not that far away, but my husband is from the South, and so he was so pleasantly surprised at how warm and welcoming the area is, because he has high expectations coming from the South.
Yeah, right.
And so we've just found the area to be incredibly warm and welcoming. I mean, just really, and I think that's true about the greater Philadelphia area and then the community. But the other thing about the area, I think, is, and it's easy to talk to prospective students, because this area, greater Philadelphia, has everything. I mean, if you think about it, it's got, we always talk about eds and meds, right? So you
sure.
got all the education. I mean, you know, when I drove in and I saw the education, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like a haven. But all the medical, the businesses, the sports, I mean, where do you find all these nationally ranked teams?
Right.
Like in terms of all sports, right?
That's right.
Art, museums. So I think it's just this area has pretty much everything in it that what else would you want in an area, right?
So, yeah, totally. Yeah. It really does.
It's, and a great community.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and we hear this from a lot of folks who have a preconceived notion about Greater Philadelphia, and then when they get here, they're like, wow, I didn't realize
right.
that there's all this to offer, as you just referenced.
There's a lot.
Yeah.
And it's easy access to a lot of other places, too.
Right.
So it's just, you know, a great community.
Yeah, for sure.
So
we're gearing up to talk with two proud Villanova graduates who have gone on to do some pretty cool things.
Yep.
And actually, in fairness, they came to Villanova with a pretty cool background as well. But how proud must you and your colleagues at Villanova be when you hear about success stories like Evil Genius Beer Company and other Villanova graduates who have gone on to do some pretty amazing things?
When I took this job 3 years ago, so many people said to me, colleagues around at other universities said, you will love the Villanova alums because they are zealots and they are so committed. And Luke and Trevor are just great examples. They are great brand ambassadors of our alums.
Yeah.
And the reason I think our alums are so unique, and I agree, they are zealots. They are passionate about this institution, whether they're graduating from undergrads or our executive MBA or MBAs or whatever part of the institution, is they are personally very successful. They do really well, but they also just do so much to give back. And so even Luke and Trevor have been phenomenal at hosting events, at helping other future entrepreneurs, at answering questions, being at events like this. I mean, and that's why they're great ambassadors, but so many of our alums do that. And so when people talk to me about, oh, you know, Wall Street, those people are greedy, I say, not the Villanovans. Because the Villanovans are up there and they're extremely successful,
yep.
but they also use their time, talent, and treasure to give back and make, you know, make this world a better place. I mean, they really try to contribute. So yeah, we're incredibly proud of our alums from any year. We're coming up on our 100 years in the business school
yep.
and talked to a lot of alums from way back, and it just they're all great stories.
1922, right, was the founding of the business school. Very
yep.
cool, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Dr. Russell, come with me to a backyard barbecue.
Okay.
And you encounter, it could be a parent of a student who is getting ready to advance their educational career.
You mean a high school student?
Yeah.
Because I talked to a lot of them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or it could be a young professional
okay.
who is thinking about going back to school
sure.
and they're trying to decide, is it Villanova School of Business? Is it something else? What kind of guidance and advice do you give to folks like that?
For going into school or just advancing in their careers?
Both.
So, you know, advancing in their careers, I mean, I always tell people, you know, and I do a lot of career coaching and have done a lot. Just follow your passion. Everybody says that, but it's so true because you spend so much time at work. I mean, I feel fortunate. I love what I do, and you have to love what you do. So I think that's really important. I think figure out your vision. Like, what's your calling? What's your purpose? What are you trying to do? And I think it's very overwhelming for young people today, too, because there's so many choices about I could do this or this. That's fine. And I think my other piece of advice about that is just start something, right?
Right.
Start today. Take the first step. Do something. And be persistent. I mean, I spend a lot of time teaching people about negotiations, and that fits in there, too, of, you know, people who are successful versus those who aren't are the ones who are persistent. They
right.
don't quit when they get that first no or something. They keep working at it. And I think it's really important for people to be, I mean, I always think about, you have to be positive.
Right? Yeah,
you have
for
to
sure.
think about what's your future moving forward and being really positive about it. And, you know, I'm a glass half full kind of person. And so I just, you know, think we should be all, every day you choose, right? You're going to
yeah.
be really positive about. I also just think you should think about your values. Like, what are your underlying values? That's one of the things that drew me to this institution is the moral character. And it's a faith-based community that really cares deeply about people and their success personally. But I think everybody has to think about, as they're doing their businesses, right? I'm sure you guys thought about it, as their values. Because you can stray, and then eventually you come back to them and say, oh, no, wait, this is really who I am as a person.
Right.
So just some thoughts about.
No, it's very helpful. I love the persistence. I love the optimism. You're speaking my language. Glass half full. It beats the alternative.
It does.
And I also love the advice of go for it, you
yeah.
know, because it can be paralyzing when you're faced with this choice of having to do something. It's easier to not do anything.
It is. And people are so, especially young people, there's just so many choices.
Yeah.
I mean, when they come here to school, I always say, you're going to be fine no matter what you do because you're graduating from a really good institution
yeah.
and you'll get a good job or you'll advance in your career. So don't fret about, you know, the little things there. But yeah, I mean, you just got to take that first step and
yeah.
start moving forward.
Yeah. So I know you touched on this a little bit earlier in our conversation, but that one thing that you want folks to know about the Villanova School of Business, what would that be? Or you can pick three if you like.
Oh, okay. My turn. I think it's really important that people know we are not just another business school. I don't think any of our faculty, our staff, our students, our alums, our employers, our advisory council members, none of them are affiliated with us because we're just another business school. I think our whole mission, our line is building business leaders for a better world. I think anybody that comes here knows that and believes that and says, okay, I'm coming to this business school because I want to leave and have a positive impact. You know, you guys made a difference in the whole community that you're in, right? And everybody thinks that way of, I want to make a difference, whether you're a faculty member or you're a student. And so I just want people to understand we're not just another business school. We're a school that really cares deeply about impacting the world so things are better.
Yeah.
And this is a time when we could use a lot of really strong ethical business leaders. And that's what our mission is.
It was a real privilege and a pleasure for us to connect with Dean Russell. And we at Select Greater Philadelphia were so appreciative of the support we receive from Villanova, which goes well beyond the hosting of this special gathering for our podcast. Now, as the only Augustinian Catholic university in the nation, Villanova truly values a personalized experience where teachers and students are partners in learning and in scholarly inquiry. Please join me and my team at Select in thanking the faculty, staff, students, and the alumni of Villanova University for their active support and engagement in our work. Learn more about all that Villanova University has to offer at villanova.edu. That's villanova.edu. Now, let's get back to our conversation with Luke and Trevor of Evil Genius.
So take us back to, I guess, the first brewery. I mean, where were you guys? Were you out of your garage? Were you working like in a warehouse somewhere in the suburbs? Or what was the first like batch that you made, if you will?
So from him, I got this idea of, so when I was dealing with Al Spinelli is the guy's name, he was working in Wisconsin for a company called City Brewing Company. They bought the old Heilman Brewery and they were contract packing all of the Pabst stuff, all of the Arizona iced tea, like Rockstar energy drink. And he had told me, he was really good friends with Jim Cook from Sam Adams. And
he's
like, you know, Jim Cook started Sam Adams making Sam Adams Boston Lager at the old Pittsburgh Brewing Company in Pittsburgh.
Huh.
And he told me, he's like, you know, there are all of these breweries that are out there with excess brewing capacity, basically.
Right.
And he's like, why are you building like a small little brewery? You'll never be able to keep up with demand if your product hits. Why don't you go out and find another facility that's empty and make some beer there?
Yeah. Yeah,
so
smart.
So that's basically what we did.
Yeah.
And, you know, that journey originally took us out to South Bend, Indiana, actually.
Okay.
There were some brothers and their dad who sold a Miller Coors distributor for $100 million or whatever and built this brewery.
Yep.
And they were looking for people to come and, you know, they
kind of sublet.
Yeah, they had the same idea, just in the inverse. So they were like, you know, would you guys be willing to partner with us? And we were like, dude, that's far. Options being limited at the time, we were like, okay, it's either sort of do this or not have a business. So we literally, we had an apartment in South Bend, Indiana, and I drove back and forth with Trev. We both, like, we sold beer in Indiana and Pennsylvania when we first started, and literally commuted back and forth, testing recipes, trying batches of beer, shipping it back and forth. And that was literally how we first started. And then from there, we outgrew it and moved on to a larger facility in New York, and then outgrew that and then moved on to a larger facility. And, you know, now we make all of our beer here in Pennsylvania in the greater Philadelphia region.
Right.
And, you know, utilizing a very similar model, even though we have our brewery in Fishtown in Philadelphia in the center. But, you know, growing and scaling that way has been really important to us, because it's enabled us to do that quickly and without actually using all that much capital, because it's very capital intensive, our business.
Cool. Well, we're glad you came back to Greater Philadelphia after kind of testing it out and
figuring it out.
Yeah. So take us to today. Take us down to the lab on Front Street in Fishtown. How big is the shop today? How many employees do you have? And what kind of volume, if you will, you're doing in terms of brew?
So the brewery there, we've got a little over 40 employees now, which is really exciting. We're in the, actually just crossed into right around the top 5% of all breweries in the U.S. in terms of production.
Wow. Yeah. In terms of volume.
In terms of volume. Wow. Yeah. So thank you.
That's impressive.
Thank you. And, you know, we're growing and just growing and growing and growing. Our biggest thing right now is just expanding geographically, moving into the southern part of the U.S., out into the Midwest. But we distribute right now from Massachusetts to Maryland is our distro area. We partner with Miller Coors. They don't own any of our company, but we work through their distribution network.
Smart.
So, yes, we work with 21 Miller Coors wholesalers in all of our territories to sell beer, which is a tremendous advantage for us. We get to put beer on the same trucks as Miller Lite and send them to retailers. So that's really, really excellent. And, you know, our goal is just to innovate and keep pushing the boundaries and creating new products that are different and interesting, marketing them kind of in a unique way to young people like us, you know, who are really the lifeblood of craft beer. And, you know, just create a good culture inside of our business where people want to come and work for us. And they, we have very low turnover, thankfully. Most people don't leave. They end up kind of sticking around because they see what we're about.
Yeah.
You know, just trying to build up our roster of just really talented people as quickly as we can.
I want to dive into that culture aspect. And before I do, I love how, and I don't want this to sound gratuitous, but you guys are really smart. And maybe it came from the advice you were getting from, you know, the guy who you wanted to be, your old girlfriend's dad. In that, you know, let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's use the infrastructure that already exists, whether it's for brewing or distributing. How hard was it to get an agreement with Miller Coors to distribute? Was it something that took a lot of negotiating, or are they like, sure?
Yeah, so just so everyone kind of understands, every wholesaler that distributes beer, most of them have like one brand that's their big brand.
Yeah.
And at this point, a lot of them have consolidated. So Miller Coors is the brand that they have. So it's Miller Coors doesn't own the wholesaler.
Yeah.
They just are affiliated with them.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, to begin with, it's difficult because you're asking someone who hasn't tasted the product,
right,
and certainly doesn't have the ability to say, well, I know that they distribute already in this state or
right,
this place, so I can call them up and
you're unproven.
Exactly.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we interviewed with and interviewed them.
Yeah.
You're kind of interviewing each other
with
virtually everyone, trying to find someone that will be both a good fit for us and who also wanted us, and was not easy to begin with.
You know? Right.
It's gotten easier over the years because now, in the reverse, you know, a new wholesaler will call up some of our, they're basically colleagues, and say, hey, so you guys distribute Evil Genius. How's that going? Are they good to work with, et cetera?
Yeah.
But at the time, we had no proven model,
yeah,
and it's unknown. So it was pretty difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet. So I want to pivot back to the culture aspect. And Luke had mentioned 40 employees, very low turnover. It sounds like you guys are very thoughtful about the culture that you're building. I'm not sure if you are being thoughtful or it's just kind of by accident, but it seems like it's a pretty cool place to work. And I was hoping you could talk with us. And Trevor, I'll start with you on this question of your employees and the spirit of camaraderie that you're building down on Front Street.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we talk about culture all the time, and it's always kind of forefront of our minds when we are talking about employees and how we interact with them and how we wanted this to be. And when we see something that we're like, I don't think that's our company culture, how do we fix that? And that's more the point in a lot of ways. Like, once you have a good direction going, it can be pretty easy for that to pivot in the wrong direction, and making sure that we don't do that is really something we really strive to do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It just seems like it's a really cool place to work.
Yeah, we have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You'll probably see from our Instagram videos, we get everyone involved in different things. Like, everyone wears many hats. I mean, everyone has their job that they're supposed to do, obviously, but people get pulled to jump into videos and to do all sorts of different things at different times, because we look at it as like everything that needs to be done here. At some point, Luke and I have done everything in that company.
Right.
So we expect everyone else to have the same level of, okay, that needs to be done. Let's go get it done.
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't even call it work.
I'm not sure they would agree with that.
Always work. Yeah.
It's still work, but yeah.
Right.
I mean, we have a brewery dog who lives with me at night.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of small things that really help to keep the place a kind of fun, loving place. And we hope to, as companies get bigger, you can lose that. And there's probably a point where you kind of have to, but we're striving to keep that as long as possible, to keep it as much fun as possible.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
So before I ask my next question, I do want folks to know that we are going to open to Florida questions. We can take a couple if you have one. You can just raise your hand and we'll come over with a mic and get your question as well. But I do want to ask, and we can't not have a conversation about Evil Genius Beer Company without talking about the flavors and the names. How do you guys, you know, go through that process? Because I think you mentioned that it's patented on your website.
Yeah, something like that. We use the word very loosely. Absolutely. No, I mean, it's funny because the way that we named our brands changed. The first couple of years, we tried to make it very regal, and we focused on, you know, I think the wrong themes. The first couple of years out of the gate, we weren't super successful.
Yeah.
You know, it just didn't resonate with people in the same way. And Trevor and I really kind of took a step back, and we were like, okay, you know, this isn't authentic. But are we being authentic to ourselves? And the answer was no.
Right.
And the way that we brand ourselves very whimsically, that's who we are. Like, that's our humor. Like, it's as authentic as it can be, because these are things that we would say to each other, say to ourselves, just like very witty, very dry,
yeah.
You know, lots of one-liners.
As you're loading the truck or doing something, you know,
And that's where it comes from. I mean, you know, that kind of creativity and that inspiration, it can't be quantified in any way. Like, it has to come from like the ether or like something that's abstract. And so those moments happen all the time. And I think that, you know, Trevor's creativity and his pursuits and like, you know, his ability to think outside the box, like, he's one of the most unique individuals I know. And he's great at that.
You're not just saying that because he's sitting here?
Well, it helps, you know.
Yeah,
but,
okay.
You know, and then my experience as a musician and stuff
looks
like that.
Okay.
And,
But,
then my experience sort of in that world, you know, like in that abstract and putting pieces together, like, really allows me to like escape into like a creative space. And I think that type of genuine authenticity and sort of how it stems from the way we name our beers, the look of the space, the stuff that we do on social media, like, none of that's really planned. It's just, this is what we're doing today. And I think that people really, in a world of kind of canned authenticity, people do see it as refreshing, but it's just literally who we are.
Yeah, I love that. The authenticity part of it is real. So I have to ask, Trevor, your favorite flavor and your favorite name, if you can. I know that's tough to do because it's like picking your favorite child, right?
Yeah, but you don't discontinue a child.
That's true. That's a good point.
But there's been so many beer names that it's hard to pick one. I think my favorite of the initial ones we had, we still make it, it's called Shut Up Meg.
Yeah.
So it's a Family Guy reference. And I love that one because we get emails all the time saying, I bought this for my wife, her name's Meg, and I can't wait to give it to her.
That's great.
Things like that. So that's one of my favorites. From a flavor perspective, anything with mango, that we put mango in it, is just because I love mango.
Yeah.
So probably that one. But like, John, our brewer, is amazing with coming up with new ideas for beers and pushing the boundaries of those things. Like, we made beers with Lucky Charms in them.
Mm.
We made beers with literally putting pretzels
and
made a pretzel beer. So we literally put mustard seed. Things that really kind of are a little bit outside the box and what you would expect from a beer is, I love the fact that we get to do it. And that's sort of stuff we can experiment down on Front Street that can't quite do in a large scale because the cost is a little bit different in that respect.
Yep.
But it's so cool to be able to do that. And it really helps to then reinforce our brand identity with people as well when they get to come and try those ones.
Yeah, that's great. Luke, favorite name, favorite brew?
Hashtag adulting is my favorite name because I have so much Peter Pan in me. It's ridiculous. So so growing up was always a big fear of mine. So I decided to start a brewery so I didn't have to. And then My favorite flavor of beer, the one I'm the most proud of, is our chocolate peanut butter porter, Purple Monkey Dishwasher.
Nice.
That was a big beer. That really kind of was definitely one that kind of turned the corner for us in terms of like really getting recognized and people kind of putting their head up and being like, oh, Evil Genius is for real.
Right.
So not only are the flavors really complex, but that beer is also really special and one that I really love as a
That's great.
Dear place for me.
Yeah. So. Trevor, have you guys ever come up with a batch and you're like, this is just horrible, we can't even release this?
I don't think we've ever done anything where we've had to dump the entire thing. No,
yeah.
I don't think so. So
right. Not even lucky, the Lucky
so,
Charms.
Yeah, not even that was actually very popular.
Yeah,
so.
That beer was really it? Popular. Yeah, yeah. It cool. was really good.
That's
it was really
great.
Good. But there definitely have been some that were like, oh, I don't know if we're making that again.
Yeah,
but you know, it's beer. Someone will drink it.
So. Yeah, that's great. Folks, questions from the floor for Luke and Trevor. We have a young lady on the second row here.
Hi. First of all, thank you so much for the discussion. As you were building out the business, how did you figure out, you know, with being two of you, who's going to play what roles and, you know, continuing that friendship but running that business at the same time? So how did you go about that?
Sure. So we kind of naturally fell into areas of kind of comparative advantage, if I'm going to use a bit nice business term. Luke comes from sales, so it was very obvious that he should be our head of sales and kind of manage that side of the business. And I faked it as much as I could in the early days. I went out there and did sales as much as I could. I faked it as best I could as well. But I'm more on the ops side, finance, as well as like I do quite a bit of our marketing as well, which those are all pieces of my background as well. So it was kind of a natural fit in that respect. So yeah. And then balancing the friendship is always going to be a difficulty. You know, I mean, there's days I want to strangle this guy. And there's days when I love him to death, but you know, it's a balance. And that's the fact that we still feel that way about each other. It means that we're still getting on in some capacity. So yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That actually sums it up perfectly.
I want to build on that question and ask, I'm not sure how sophisticated the operation was in the early days. Did you ever have one of those moments, for those of us old enough to remember, an I Love Lucy episode where like you're bottling the beer and it's going haywire? Or did you like outsource all of that stuff? And really were like in a bottling situation.
I mean, we've had our own chaos. Like, I mean, like I literally sold beer for the first time by like having a little 10-liter keg in a cooler and rolling that into bars and tapping it and pouring samples for
like
people.
Like a lemonade stand.
Yeah, legitimately. So like, I mean, everywhere from something just that basic.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, we were there for kegging days in the early bottling runs, like, we got our hands dirty. And, you know, I think, as to Trevor's point, like, we've done every job in the company. We literally have. We've done everything from starting the business to, like, we washed dishes in the tap room when things got really crazy busy when we first opened and there just weren't enough hands. And so I think, like, understanding and doing each one of those jobs has enabled us to figure out ways to make it more efficient. And, you know, we talk a lot about efficiency here and trying to – we play money ball at Evil Genius. We have to because we're small. So we have to overachieve. Every person needs to do a person and a half's worth of effort or labor. And so the only way we can do that is really by truly understanding what's happening inside the business.
Yeah. We have time for one more question from the floor and then a couple wrap-up questions. Yes, sir.
I actually, as most of my students will attest, I talk about beer quite a bit in class. But I was just wondering if you have any international expansion plans, or if so, I mean, especially with Trevor, your Irish background, do you have any plans for expansion overseas?
Yeah, I mean, I get asked this question from family and friends back home all the time. It's something we've always talked about. It's just that there's still so much geography we're not in this country, and not that we ever expect to be a national brand by any means, but there's still so many places close to us that we're probably going to concentrate on those first before we go international. But I mean, I would love to see it in like my local liquor store in Dublin, but I don't know if that's in the near future, but it will be there someday. Definitely.
So that's a good segue to a couple wrap-up questions we have. Where will Evil Genius be in the next 3 years, 5 years, 10 years from now?
I mean, number one, we're still going to be here, which is the most important thing about being in business is staying in business, because we have a good team, we have good partner distributors, and you know, we're still humming along, you know, and still being creative and coming up with new ideas. 3 years from now, you're really going to see us expand geographically pretty severely down south in the Midwest. You know, 5 to 10 years, you know, we'd like to create more innovations. You know, we'd like to get into other product segments within alcohol. We've been piloting hard seltzer products right now, hard cider products right now. We've talked about getting in clear liquors and other spirits, because we already sell in the same retailers. It would just be easy to plug and play another Evil Genius brand through our same channels. And then ultimately, we would like to, you know, be somebody that either goes out and actually probably acquires another business or builds through acquisitions. We're diversifying ourselves within alcohol. So,
yeah.
You know, we're not done.
Interesting.
We've had offers to sell the company. We've politely declined. We're lifers. You know, we want to be in this business for a long time. Obviously, we did it to rub a few pennies together, but I think that sometimes you get richer by buying and not selling.
Yeah. So I know we talked about a couple names and Shut Up Meg and hashtag adulting. And my favorite is You're Killing Me Smalls.
Yeah. We had the Sandlot guys in actually.
Oh, last did you really?
Yeah,
oh, so, very cool.
Yeah. So And Timmy Timmons from the Sandlot actually came in and hung out with us in the brewery.
Very cool.
Yeah. They were there to throw out the first pitch of the Phillies game. And I get this call from Trevor. He's like, where are you? We just got a call from somebody's publicist that the guys from the Sandlot are coming. You should come back here right now. And
that's
of course,
great.
I'm going like 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, right.
So that was my favorite movie growing
that's
up
great.
As a kid. And we have pictures of them drinking the beer and hanging out with us. Like, that was the coolest.
That's great.
That was the coolest thing.
That is cool. Very cool. Where I'm going with this is, how did you come up with the name Evil Genius? And how much time did that take? Or was it one of those things that just kind of like hit you?
It took a long time because there was a few factors. Number one, we had to agree on something, and that can always be something that is difficult. Because this is like the company name, you know,
right.
This isn't something like beer name. You can kind of say, you know, get rid of, change the beers or whatever.
Yeah.
But this was the company name. Also, we were very mindful that we weren't picking something that was either another brewery's name for obvious reasons, or even a beer that they were making. At the time, there was still a significant amount of breweries in the country that it was difficult. We'd come up with a good name, Google it, and find that there was some small brewery, you know, on the West Coast. And we're like, you know, we don't want the issue today, tomorrow, or down the road of this being like a problem. And so we were doing a lot of wordplay, and I know that we were doing some sort of analysis on, okay, so what is beer? So beer is you're mixing things together, and that kind of put us in a laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
You can probably see where we kind of ended up at Evil Genius for that. I remember like Googling that one going, it's not taken. And we're like, that's weird, because it seemed like a really good name.
Yeah.
And then we started second guessing ourselves, going, well, maybe it's not a good name. Why didn't anybody take it?
Right.
So you start like, so eventually we actually did a Survey Monkey with our classmates. Sent it to 100 people with that and a few other names that we kind of liked, a couple we threw in that we knew we didn't like, just to also gauge to make sure we weren't in a, you know, a bubble that people weren't.
Tunnel vision. Yeah.
Exactly. And Evil Genius won hands down. So
that's
okay,
great.
We're on to something here. So,
if you're able to share or remember, if it wasn't Evil Genius, what would it be?
What was the other one? Renegade was one that I think came second.
Okay.
And after that, I really don't remember the other ones because I think they were pretty far down the list.
They were terrible. Yeah. But we were like, all right, is the word evil in it? Like, are it's not going to like be negative for something? Because you have to think about all those
things. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Is it offensive? All that stuff.
Yeah.
Really glad you didn't go with Renegade.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting feedback from students, what kind of advice do you give young people who are sitting in this audience today if they're thinking about, you know, what's next for them? What product are they going to start? What shop are they going to open?
I mean, like, it's all going to be okay. You know, like, and that was the advice for me that I thought was really powerful. I shared earlier, but like, whatever journey you go down, just go down it confidently, and it's all going to be okay. Like, life is this weird way of just kind of working out. I have no way to explain that. It just like, it seems chaotic, but you know, if you're doing it righteously and your intentions are good, things do work out.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to just trust that the path you're on is the right path and just keep walking.
Yeah, that's great. My wrap-up question with less than a minute or so to go is, I love how you guys didn't just conclude your time at Villanova in 2010 and say, see you later. You are clearly integrated into the Villanova community. And I know you have a great advisory board. Some are represented here today who are providing you guidance back then and even through today as well. And you mentioned earlier that some of these friends and colleagues and mentors are your investors today. Do you think Evil Genius would have been what it is if it weren't for your connections with the Villanova community?
Oh, definitely not. Even the initial part of us being here before it even started, that was super important to our success and has continued throughout the years since then as well. And this is one of the reasons why anytime a professor calls and says, hey, would you like to come in and give a chat? We're like, absolutely, because we get great feedback from that as well. And it's also, to a certain very small extent, it feels like we're paying back a little bit of our debt.
Yeah.
Because honestly, our time here was amazing and we wouldn't have started the business otherwise. There's no debt.
Be sure to visit Luke and Trevor at the Evil Genius Beer Company's tasting room known as The Lab. It's located on Front Street in Philadelphia's burgeoning Fishtown neighborhood. As you enjoy some of their craft beers, please be sure to drink responsibly. And while you travel to the Evil Genius Lab, listen to one of the many other pioneering entrepreneurial stories featured right here on Growing Greater. You can find these stories online at selectgreaterphl.com/podcast or anywhere you get your podcasts. So before we close out this episode of our program, I want to invite you to Breaking Ground. It's our annual program where we showcase development projects that are revitalizing our Greater Philadelphia neighborhood. You'll get an insider's look at the new Market East in Center City, Philadelphia, the reimagining of Pottstown in Montgomery County, as well as projects in Claymont, Delaware, and how an investment in civic space is planting the seeds of growth in Trenton, New Jersey. It's all set for Wednesday, June 12th from 8 to 10 a.m. at the University of the Sciences on 43rd Street in the University City neighborhood of West Philadelphia. Free parking, great breakfast, and with each of you attending along with scores of other guests, it's sure to be a can't-miss event. I hope to meet you there, so please register today for Breaking Ground at chamberphl.com/events. That's chamberphl.com/events. Growing Greater is presented by Select Greater Philadelphia, a council of our Chamber of Commerce for Greater Philadelphia. Select is the business attraction organization for Northern Delaware, Southern New Jersey, and Southeastern Pennsylvania, and helps to grow the economic vibrancy of our collective community by attracting new businesses and new jobs to our region. Special thanks to our program producers, Elena Carmazin and Maricela Juarez, along with the great team of marketing and creative services professionals at our chamber. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in anytime and anywhere you get your podcasts or online at selectgreaterphl.com/podcast.